QuiteTheThingMedia.com. The network, oh, without constraints.
Hi everybody and welcome to our first part in a six-part series about how to write a book. But before we get there, if you like what we're doing, I'd ask you if you could please visit the site wrongtermmemory.com or buymeacoffee.com/wrongtermmemory. And I don't want to say donation, we're not a charity, but if you could leave us a tip, it would help with hosting costs, basically, is what we spend our money on. But Colin, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, mate. Yeah, not bad at all. I'm looking forward to this, actually. This is going to be quite interesting, I think. So right into this one, very much indeed. And we couldn't ever do a pod about writing a book without inviting our friend along, who has done just that, written a very good book, Martin Ramsey. Martin, welcome to Wrong Term Memory.
Thank you, boys. Lovely to be on. A couple of media magnates like you. It's good to be here. You're taking over.
Oh, we're trying. We're trying. Yeah. it's not as quick as I would like, to be perfectly honest with you. But these things take time. Martin, I asked you to come on, and I asked you to sort of break down the writing process into six parts, basically. So what part are we going to be looking at today, part one?
Well, we're going to start at the beginning, obviously. And do you actually have an idea? You two guys are creative people. I'm sometimes creative. I'm sure you've had many pod ideas where you've thought in that moment for at least a day or two, this will work, this is absolutely brilliant. And then by the end of the week, you say, no, that actually won't fly at all. We all go through these creative moments where we're absolutely convinced of something. So it's really just to establish exactly that. Do you have something that's going to last the pace of the writing process? Because it can be pretty intense.
Speaking about ideas then, what do you think of this guy called Joe Bovino, who wrote a book in 2012? Basically, this guy is a pickup artist, which, I'll be honest, never fucking heard of before. He wrote a book about women of the USA and how to seduce them, basically. Is that a good idea, Colin?
I definitely don't think it's a good idea. I had a wee look into this guy, because like you, I didn't know of him either. He's actually a little bit more specific than that. His book is actually about how to find and identify the right Latina to update.
Right, okay.
It goes into that much detail, and it's pretty horrendous, some of the stuff he says. He does describe the Latinas of America as a being of a completely different species, and he puts them into 14 different categories of Latina.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, one of my favourite things over on Heart and Hand, our other shows, is to get Martin to read reviews of things, basically, Martin. So I sent you a couple of reviews of this book. Can you read them, please?
Sure. Emma Gray, writing in the Huffington Post, said, maybe the worst book ever.
Which is short and sweet, man.
Yeah, it gets to the point. Lindy West and Jezebel called the book's FAQ page the most perfect combination of gleeful sexism and clueless racism ever committed to internet paper. I like the phrase internet paper. I think that has a certain charm to it. My flatmate at the time had this book, I'm pretty sure. Certainly some
pop it. Oh, no way.
And someone who didn't need help, he's married with a family now, but certainly doesn't need it now, but didn't need any kind of academic research in his ability to find companions, shall we say. But I do remember it being in the flat. I'd never read it. Maybe I should have, but is this where negging comes from? This concept of negging, that you if you see someone attractive, you say, oh yeah, that kind of thing, like notice the readings, but say, yeah, look probably better than someone else or something like that. That oh, there's an interest, but you know, I must look into that. I must kind of follow that up. What do you mean? What do you mean? How can I be better? Kind of thing. You kind of got them hooked. It seems a very reductive idea, and I'm not surprised that the reviews are as scathing as they were.
He calls the activity of what he does chica spotting.
Chica, fuck's sake. Yeah, to put that in inverted commas, like, we're just quoting from this absolute ticket by the sounds of it. Martin, we do a wee book club here, I suppose. Going to sort of put you on the spot. Have you got a favourite book?
I have two. Listen, I'm terrible for fiction. I don't read as much fiction as I would like. I guess from an early age, the movies and TV did a good enough job at conveying stories to me, and I let them do all the work. So I'm pretty lazy there. When it comes to non-fiction, I'm pretty heavy into it, and my bookshelves would be testament to that. Clive James is my favourite writer of all time, and he brought out this book in 2006, I think, called Cultural Amnesia, which was really an introduction to guys you'd heard of, people that you'd never heard of, writers, philosophers, artists, thinkers, musicians, whatever, and bringing them all together into this this one compendium of essays. And it would be one of the things that grabbed first when, you know, leaving a burning house. Also Woody Allen's complete prose, short stories, thoughts. I think it combines three books into the one, and it's easily the funniest collection of pages that have ever been bound together.
So I suppose therein lies a bit of a dichotomy then. Can you separate the idea of having a great idea and what Woody Allen has done there from the who he is, basically? Kind of a little bit like separating the artist from Michael Jackson or whatever. You know, there's issues there with the author.
There are, and this is a whole other podcast, I think. But yeah, it is an interesting one. I mean, there are plenty. If you go into the higher arts, Wagner being an obvious issue with some of his thoughts and beliefs at the time, but no, it doesn't stop Annie Hall being a brilliant film. It doesn't stop those stories being genius. But again, I would dare to say that the Woody Allen story is maybe not quite as clear cut as some of the others.
As some, yeah. Right, Martin, we've got you on here because you are an author. What was your idea? Tell us about your book, basically, because we've not mentioned it yet.
Yeah, I'll try and be quick on this. My book's a football one. It's about Rangers. It's called the 50 Greatest Rangers Games. It came out of a podcast. Of course, we have podcasts on the same network in Heart and Hand. And my one was about Rangers games and having someone on that had been to that game or Rangers games of the past and try to get their experiences of that and reassess, reevaluate the game in particular. And by the end of 2018, I'd done about 50 of these shows, and I'd done a lot of work on this. There was a lot of work, a lot of notes been taken, and a lot of these perspectives kind of collected. And I produced a series of shows before Christmas of 2018 called the 50 Greatest Rangers Goals, where we got our listeners to vote, and we put these shows out before Christmas, and they were, I think, quite successful, quite a big hit. So I knew that in 2019 I would do the same the following Christmas, but for games. And I don't know how, it just came to me one morning at the start of March that year. I've written, I've so many notes, I've got so many conversations about some of the games that would feature. I'm sure maybe there's a book in it. Maybe there's a way of kind of collecting a lot of the work that I've already done and would continue to do. Maybe there's something in this. I asked our mutual friend, David, and he said, no, I don't think so, mate, which was very helpful. I went to the publisher anyway and said, look, here's where I am, here's where Heart and Hand is, here's where maybe the exposure is. Is there something in this? And I remember I was at Ibrox that night, and I remember getting an email from the publisher saying, I think there might be, you know. I've copied in the editor. Let's have a chat. Basically, what she asked me to do was write a couple of sample chapters. I wrote three in the end of games that I knew would make it. I would be astounded if they hadn't made the list. And it was the best advice I've been given in the whole process, because I didn't know what this book would look like. I didn't, other than I'll just write about these 50 games, whatever they turn out to be. But once I get into it, and once I had something, not on paper obviously, but it was on the screen, something finished, I was very happy with. And I'd sent it to two or three of our friends, kind of older Rangers fans, where maybe my target audience was. It was, does this make sense? And to be honest, even if they came back and said, I'm not so sure, I was convinced. I knew I had something, but it wasn't until I'd actually written, I don't know, 8,000-9,000 words by that point without these three sample chapters that, no, there's something in that. I sent those off. The editors have come back and said, yeah, let's do it then. Let's move forward. And what they always ask you to do at the start when you're kind of agreeing the contract, you've obviously looked at the timescales and all that, but she asked me to write a description, a blurb, basically. Now, again, that would be the last thing I changed before it went to print, but it was so helpful to just try and sum this project up in a paragraph. And in writing that paragraph, my whole concept for the book changed. I knew I didn't want it to be 50 match reports, because you could get those anywhere. It was always going to be kind of 50 essays, 50 retrospectives on these games. But in doing that paragraph and trying to sum this thing up, forcing myself to write it, I knew then it would be an explanation as to why these games resonate, why some don't, and really I let the listenership choose these games, and then I try to make sense of them. And there would be an arc pretty much running the way through these chapters. And I knew in writing that simple thing as an exercise that I had a bigger and a better idea for what I actually wanted to produce. And it's, you might have this idea, but actually forcing yourself to just throw it out there. What's this going to look like? What would a sample chapter look like? Write me the blurb now before you've even written a word. It's really, really helpful in getting a real sense of what you want and testing the idea. Because as I said, the three of us, I'm sure, have had 100 ideas that we've never committed to the airwaves or never committed to print, because when we've thought about it a wee bit more, that doesn't quite work. Or it mutates into something else. So it's forcing yourself to actually commit to it in paper.
That blurb part of that story, Martin, is really interesting to me, because similar to yourself probably, I did imagine that would be a summarising job that you would do at the end, to let's find something short and snappy that's going to bring eyeballs to this and make people buy it. But to actually get the advice to do it at the start, to give you a sort of a North Star to sort of guide your writing towards, it's actually very, very clever when you think about it. It makes sense, but I have never thought of a blurb in that manner. I've never thought of it really as a marketing tool. So that is really interesting. You said you spoke to our mutual friend who is also a published author to get advice. Turns out his advice wasn't very good, but I'm a big fan of advice. I don't think anybody ever really comes up with anything brand new or truly original. There's always somebody that's done something similar or has some advice. So I'm a big fan of taking on feedback, taking on other people's ideas and trying to manipulate them and change them around and think of some offshoots from them, sort of thing. Found some examples of advice given to authors, quite keen to get your idea on them. The first one is rejection is part of a writer's job description. You'll get it from reviewers, readers, editors, bookstore owners, advertising newsletters, and even your brother-in-law. Get used to it.
Or your friend.
How did that come into your process? Because I don't know. I think this was the first book you ever tried to do, and it became a book. So maybe rejection wasn't such a thing for you.
Not in that literal sense. The first publisher I went to, they picked it up. So yeah, there's no J.K. Rowling story here. Sadly, not either. And the bank account mistakes. So no, but the advice is solid, just in terms of that process that I was talking about, shaping that idea, because it wasn't how I envisaged it in March. I mean, this deal was agreed at the end of April, right? Easter weekend. So that's the best part of 2 months of passed since I first thought of this in the shower, and then sending something back in a contract that this is what it's going to look like. And you can't be too precious about it, and you can't be too fixed to it, because there's a good chance you'll come out with something better if you do listen to that, or someone says, I'm really sure this is going to work. But you're right, in my one experience of doing this, or I've got my second book commissioned now, but I've not had that immediate rejection though. But
the other,
see, it's a challenge, because you might have to adapt a wee bit.
Yeah, the other big sort of advice that seems to get parried about as well is write what you're passionate about, follow your passion, write about what you know. I hope you don't mind me asking, you are quite a cunning linguist, Martin. You are very good with words at putting your point across. So do you agree with that? Do you think you could create a book as intriguing and as interesting to others if it was a book about Raith Rovers or Shrewsbury Town?
Probably not, let's be honest, because the heart wouldn't be in it, and there's no way I would give the best part of a year of my life and 140,000 words on Shrewsbury Town, because it's not that interesting. But the write about what you know, people kind of mock that advice and say, well, you know, how do people come up with science fiction? Well, that's a setting, isn't it? There are still themes that people feel very strongly about and points that people want to try and make through art. And that's what drives those projects. But I think even in my book, and Jack's done a very good showbiz thing here by talking about the book, and I've never read a word of it. It's very
yeah, that came from the other day. I will buy it at some point, mate. Just
awful friend.
Yeah. But the book isn't just about Rangers, right? There are references in there to just talk about Clive James a minute ago. There's Albert Camus pops up, Philip Larkin pops up. There are a whole host of things that I thought were relevant to the point I was trying to make in each chapter. So again, it was bringing other interests into Colin, I suppose, because I'm a big believer that sport produces the kind of drama, the kind of emotion that cinema, telly, as much as I love them, can sometimes only dream of doing, and it should really kind of sit along the humanities as an interest. So why would they not chuck in some other references from other elements of the arts and philosophy and whatever else? Because I still think they're relevant. So I try to bring in a whole host of interests in this, but essentially the point's right, I think.
Right, okay. From what I've heard, because I've not read it. It's a great book, but we'll wrap it up for part one here, and we will be back with you next week, I think, with part two. So Colin, cheers, buddy.
Cheers, mate. See you soon.
And Martin, we'll speak to you soon as well, mate.
Thanks, Jack. Look forward to it.
Browse only the best pods in the best network. QuiteTheThingMedia.com.